Chapter 10, The Universal Will. The question of the existence of a universal will and its relation to individual wills is fundamental because it is closely connected with the larger problem of the relation between man and the ultimate universal reality. A difficulty in dealing with this subject is the fact that up until recently, this relationship has been conceived and expressed chiefly in religious terms. At present, such an approach has little appeal to many people and is even flatly denied. One might say, in rather irreverent terms, that presently God has a bad press. Some have asserted in a sensational way that God is dead. But apart from that, for many people, God is only an abstraction, a concept, a symbol, a matter of faith in the sense of more or less blind belief, or at the utmost, of hope, but not a living reality. It does not affect their feelings and their actions. In practice, they live as if God did not exist. This attitude can be understood largely as a reaction against both the anthropomorphic images of God and the theologies which have attempted to give theoretical conception to a reality which transcends any such formulations. Man had created a God in his own image, attributing to him his own human qualities, and often, more or less explicitly, his own limitations and imperfections. It is these images and the various theological models of God which are being refused, which are dying. There are other approaches to ultimate reality, however, which are more satisfactory and fruitful. One is the intuitional approach. The intuition has been recognized by many, both in the East and in the West, as a true and higher means of cognition. It has been considered by Jung and others as a psychological function in its own right, as a real and legitimate as any of the others. The difference can be said to consist between the attempts to prove the existence of God through intellectual and rational means, as has been attempted by certain schools of theology, and the intuitive direct experience of communion with the ultimate reality. But there is another distinction which it would be well to make clear. The word reason has been used in two ways by philosophers. One employs reason to mean the mental, analytical concept of reason. This might be called Aristotelian. And it is the one adopted more or less consciously by modern science and by rationalistic philosophers. The conception of reason corresponds to the logos of Plato and the transcendental reason of Kant and others. A second approach to reality is through the perception of analogies. And here we have a footnote. The existence of analogies throughout nature is well known to science. It has led to several important technological developments, among which is the analog computer. Returning to text. The approach of analogy is based on the essential unity of all the aspects of reality, from the smallest to the largest. Thus, there is a close correspondence between the microcosm and the macrocosm in general, and specifically between man and the universe. But this basic identity of nature does not mean that man in his normal state of consciousness can mentally understand, comprehend the immense scope and meaning of the ultimate reality. The following analogy of the relation between a drop of water and all the waters existing in our planet may help clarify the point. If a drop had intelligence, it could assert that it had the same nature as all the waters of the planet, that is, the same chemical composition, two atoms of hydrogen and one of oxygen connected according to a certain pattern. All the waters on the planet have the same chemical composition, but among them there are numerous differences. Differences of location, oceans, lakes, rivers, of conditions, liquid, solid, gas, of functions, Water can be part of a vegetable, animal, or human organism. And of the relationships with the other substances, solutions. A tiny drop, if it had intelligence, could not conceive or even imagine all these things, but it would be aware, at least, that it had the same chemical composition as the rest. Let us apply this analogy to man and the universe. Man can have the intuitive realization of his essential identity with the supreme reality. In the East, it has been expressed as the identity between the Atman and the Brahman. In the West, some mystics have boldly proclaimed the identity between man and God. Others have emphasized that life is one, that there is only one life. But this does not mean that man's mind can grasp the wonder and mysteries of the cosmic manifestation. Only through a series of expansions of consciousness, only by reaching ever higher states of awareness, may he gradually experience some of these wondrous mysteries. Of such transpersonal possibilities, the most enlightened men and women of all ages have given testimony, expressing them in basically the same way, above the differences in colourings due to the individual and cultural conditionings. To the reverse, the anthropomorphic position, it can be said, to reverse the anthropomorphic position, it can be said that all human qualities and functions are partial reflections in the etymological sense, as images in a mirror or light through a prism, of qualities and aspects of the transcendent reality. As we have seen, man's basic existential experience, when disidentified from all the various psychological elements, the conscious being, is being a living self. This is an aspect of the universal self, or being. The experiential realization of this relationship has successive degrees, which are pictured on page 127. And so there we have three egg-type diagrams expressing the different relationships. In diagram one, the radiation of the star symbol symbolizing... In diagram one, the radiation of the star symbolizing the transpersonal self is directed almost completely within the periphery or area of the individual psyche, indicating that the attention of the self is directed chiefly towards the personal self, or I, and its activity is bent on influencing the whole man by radiation from and through the superconscious level. In the second diagram, the attention and activity of the self are shown as evenly distributed between the downward direction toward the personality and the upward direction towards the transcendent reality. In this condition, achieved in and through many stages of expanded awareness, the subject has some realization of his participation in a universal state of being, while preserving at the same time a vivid, even sharpened sense of the individual identity, of being fully himself. The radiation of the star in the third diagram indicates the highest states of transcendence, in which the sense of individual identity is dimmed and may even seem temporarily lost. These are states variously called samadhi, prajna, satan, ecstasies, cosmic consciousness, etc. But even in these states, the sense of individuality is not wholly lost. This has been clearly formulated by Lama Angarika Govindina in the following way. Individuality is not only the necessary and complementary opposite of universality, but the focal point through which alone universality can be experienced. The suppression of individuality, the philosophical or religious denial of its value or importance, can only lead to a state of complete indifference and dissolution, which may be a liberation from suffering, but a purely negative one, as it deprives us of the highest experience towards which the process of individuation seems to aim, the experience of perfect enlightenment, of Buddhahood, in which the universality of our true being is realized. merely to merge into the whole, like a drop into the sea, without having realized that wholeness, is only a poetical way of accepting annihilation and evading the problem that the fact of our individuality poses. Why should the universe evolve individualized forms of life and consciousness if this were not consistent with or inherent in the very spirit or nature of the universe? And by Radhan Krishan, the peculiar privilege of the human self is that he can consciously join and work for the whole and embody in his own life the purpose of the whole. The two elements of selfhood, uniqueness, eachness, and universality, allness, grow together until at last the most unique becomes the most universal. Maslow describes this experience in his article Various Meanings of Transcendence as follows. Also useful would be Buck's use of cosmic consciousness. This special phenomenological state in which the person somehow perceives the whole cosmos, or at least the unity and integration of it, and of everything in it, including his self. He then feels as if he belongs by right in the cosmos. He becomes one of the family rather than an orphan. He comes inside rather than being outside looking in. He feels simultaneously small because of the vastness of the universe, but also an important being because he is there in it by absolute right. He is a part of the universe rather than a stranger to it or an intruder in it. The existence of the universal mind, of an inherent rationality of the universe, has been affirmed by many in various ways, both philosophical and scientific. A discussion of the validity of these conceptions cannot be made here. It would lead too far. But in a general way, a similar analogy can be made for all human functions. All human love, even in its highest transpersonal aspect, can be considered as the partial expression of a universal principle of love. The mystics of all times and places have testified to having experienced the reality of such love. The physical manifestation of love offers an evident analogy with, and can be considered as a reflection of, the universal polarity. The interplay between what has variously been called spirit-matter, yang-yin, Shiva-shakti, etc. And here we have a footnote. All that has been said concerns only reality in manifestation, or in the process of manifesting, where there are degrees of transcendence. Of the unmanifest or transcendent reality, in an absolute sense, nothing can be said. It can be indicated or hinted at only through negations, not this, not that, no thing, the void. This aspect of reality has been emphasized by some schools of Northern Buddhism and in the West by Meister Eckhart. An extensive discussion of this subject from different angles by various authors is contained in the journal Hermes 6 Levide, edited by J. Matsui, Menard, Paris, 1969. Returning to text. The same relationship of analogy exists between the individual will and the universal will. It is based on the intimate relation which, as we have seen, exists between the self and the will at all levels. This relationship has been affirmed to be an existential reality by those who have experienced it. Here again, let us recognize that if there was not a universal will, man would possess something not existing in the universe, and therefore the microcosm would be superior to the macrocosm, indeed a ridiculous conceit. The harmonization, communion, unification, and fusion of the two wills has been and is the deep aspiration and, one might say, the highest, even if often unrealized, need of humanity. It has been felt and expressed in various ways according to the various concepts of realities held by different types of human beings. Essentially, it means tuning in and willingly participating in the rhythms of universal life. In Indian philosophy, it is called sattva and guna of rhythm and of harmonious, the guna of rhythm, and of harmonious response to divine urge. The Chinese call this attitude wu wei, or identification with the Tao. For the Stoics and Spinoza, it has been the willing acceptance of one's destiny. For those having a devotional nature or a religious conception of faith, it is the relationship of the eventual unification of man's will with God's will. Many descriptions and testimonies of this relationship and of the vicissitudes of its interplay, of the conflicts and the culminating of the two wills, can be found in the writing of the greatest mystics of both the East and the West. Here I shall quote only the poetic expression given to it by Dante in the closing verses of the Divine Comedy. But rolling like a wheel that never jars, my will and wish were now by love impelled, the love that moves the sun and all the other stars. The most direct and highest attainment of the will to unification has been made by Christ. Not my will, but thine be done. And its achievement in his triumphant affirmation, I and the Father are one. End of chapter 10.